acting, it would help the generation.
So you mean you wanted to raise awareness among the people vis-a-vis the Zionist movement?
That's right.
Again, I mean, just to tell about the malicious nature of this movement, for example.
More than just the malicious, to show that the whole thing was wrong. The whole thing was wrong.
What do you mean when you say the whole thing?
Right. Let's just take a brief look at the two sides of the issue. As Orthodox Jews, we have a teaching that we have our Torah, that's our religion, that's our way of life, it covers every aspect of our way of life. One of the aspects of that way of life was when we were first given that way of life, and that is going back 3,500 years, as is described in the Bible, in the Old Testament, we were also told that incorporated among all the various other aspects of our way of life was also a question of where we're going to live. And we were told we would live in the Holy Land, the land which is known as Palestine.
Yeah.
And we did live there for the first 1,500 years of our existence. But we were also told that in order to stay there, we had to maintain certain standards of religious and moral behavior.
Yeah.
And if we didn't keep those standards, then we would go into exile. And regretfully, that is what happened. But the exile was decreed by the Almighty, and we went into exile by the Almighty. By the Almighty, and that took place as was foretold approximately 2,000 years ago, and we were warned: this is a God decreed exile. We are not allowed to fight against it. We are forsworn not to fight against it in any way. And we were warned that if we did try and do so, there would be dire consequences. And we have to be in exile, we have to live as loyal citizens in all the various countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that was universally held, all our great teachers.
Universally held view, you mean?
Among the, yes.
For all of the Jews or only the religious ones?
Well, most Jews were religious. It's only a fairly recent phenomenon going back perhaps the last 100 years, in fact more or less since the time perhaps before 150 years, that there's been a great fall away of religious observance among Jewish people. Most Jewish people were religious, and in fact if they weren't religious they fell away from, they lost their Jewish identity, because the only thing that kept the Jewish identity wasn't a land. Because the thing that maintains the Jewish identity is the fact that they are a member of the Jewish people plus a religion. Most nations maintain their identity by living in a certain place.
Yeah.
We're in exile, we're all over the world.
And the new concept of the state, if you talk about a state,
right,
the new concept or the concept of a state, you have people, you have land, and you have government, a certain governance system.
That is not the Jewish concept. Mm-hmm. That is a general secular concept.
So then how do you describe the existence of Israel?
Right. So that in fact has become, that is what was born out of the Zionist ideal. The Zionist ideal only came into being approximately 100 years ago, mostly by secular Jews who did not have the understanding that the exile was a divinely decreed condition against which we were not allowed to.
But back then you're saying that basically most of the Jews were religious.
Yes, very
few. So if they were religious, how did it happen that few secular people come and were able to make this magnificent success?
Well, it took a long time. Actually, when the Zionist movement was first started, the vast majority of Orthodox rabbis, there's much documentation, perhaps he has it in this book, I don't know, much documentation which showed their total opposition to the Zionist idea, and warning that the Zionist idea was a danger to the Jewish people. And in fact, right up to the Second World War, although it became obviously quite strong in Palestine itself, because part of the Zionist idea right from the beginning was as many people should go to Palestine as possible. But the vast majority, right around the world, it wasn't very well accepted. When it attained popular appeal was after the Second World War, after the terrible tragedy of the Holocaust. And then there were so many thousands, hundreds of thousands of refugees and they had nowhere to go, and their natural inclination was to veer towards going to Palestine and living in Palestine, but not as Zionists. Actually, then a lot of them only came because there was nowhere else to go. But being there, together with the fact that the Zionists were already there before, gradually the whole thing merged and developed. And of course, then the Zionist state came into being. Mm-hmm. You say it was a success. Success is relative.
Exactly.
At what cost was that success?
Mm-hmm. You tell me. You know.
Well, let me tell you. The Zionist idea started approximately 100 years ago. Until that time, Jews had lived in all the Arab countries for hundreds, even thousands of years. It wasn't always a bed of roses, as Rabbi Weiss said. It wasn't always a bed of roses, but generally speaking, they lived there very often when there was persecution, much more persecution in Europe. They took refuge in the Arab and Muslim states. And then the people arrived in Palestine, and there'd been people living in Palestine beforehand, but they only came there to live a life of religion, a life of study, not interfering in any way with the local population, and their relationship was very good. Then the Zionist movement came along, and people began to arrive in Palestine saying, we are coming here, and we're going to make a state of our own. And it's going to be a Jewish state. They called it a Jewish state. I would like a Zionist state, but they called it a Jewish state. And suddenly, the Palestinian people who were living there, who didn't have a state of their own then, they were under the Turkish Empire, but they had the hope of self-determination, as a lot of colonial populations had, indigenous populations. They were suddenly saying, hey, what's happening here? People are arriving, and they're going to make their state. Where do we come into this situation? And alarm bells began to ring, and a confrontation developed. And of course, we all know, a confrontation leads to force, leads to bloodshed.
Yeah.
And that confrontation has stayed right up to the present time, and it has cost thousands and thousands of lives, both Palestinian and Jewish. So there we come to the cost of the Zionist state. The Zionist state came into being with the help of the nations of the world, probably, and most people understand this to be the case, because after the Second World War, the nations of the world felt that they had to solve their conscience to a degree for what had happened under the Nazi regime, and they helped. In fact, it had already been started, of course, by the Balfour Declaration earlier, but it gathered momentum and came into being through the auspices of the United Nations soon after the Second World War. The United Nations were not the masters of the land, but they were giving away a piece of somebody else's land to the Jewish people to solve their consciences for what had happened during the Second World War.
How do you view Israel today? What does the name Israel rings in your minds?
The name Israel is an embodiment of the Zionist idea. The Zionist idea was to form a state, but it was to form a state irrespective of the cost in life and property to whoever was standing in the way.
So you mean it's void of any morality?
The actual existence of the Zionist state is a flawed concept. It's a criminal concept.
Mm.
And it is, in fact, totally against...
So you agree with many Arabs and Muslims who hold the view that the existence of Israel is not illegitimate, it's not a legal one, it should not be recognized in any means?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And what about the world nations and states who continue to pressure people to recognize the existence of Israel?
That is one of the amazing paradoxes of the current time. We can only say it's a heavenly test of testing our belief. It is indeed a paradox why that should be. Why, if a country like the United States, who are supposed to be a democratic country, how they, and United Kingdom, how they can say that the Zionist state is a democratic state when it's patently not so, in relation to its...
Do you believe only it has to do with the brainwash and with the propaganda, as many might say, or does have to do with the influence of the Zionists inside those countries? You live in UK, for example, and you know you have the Israelis, the Zionists, are so successful in lobbying, let's admit that, and they are hold influential places, different places of the world. Do you attribute this success or this support by the world nations because of this influence, or would it a propaganda, or what's there, please?
I attribute it to the propaganda, or the Zionist propaganda, but one has to understand how it was that it managed to get up off the ground and succeed. And this was a number of factors. Mainly, which gave it the greatest momentum was the Second World War. But even beforehand, the Balfour Declaration, for instance, was, I'm not completely au fait with the situation, but what I gather is that there was a political situation between, soon after at the time of the end of the First World War, when the Great Britain wants to bring the United States into the First World War, and there were influential people who were able to Jewish people who were able to help influence the United States to come into the First World War, and they managed to influence the British government to set up the idea of the Balfour Declaration. So in other words, they used current political situations in order to further their cause. And that's how the Balfour Declaration came. And then, but after the Second World War, the Zionists used, in fact, the Zionists also used the Nazi era to help their cause.
Of course.
Because Hitler wanted to rid Germany of Jewish population. The Zionists also wanted to rid Germany of Jewish population. They wanted to...
Why?
Because that would further their cause. Yeah. They wanted to form a state.
So they would encourage Hitler, for example, to persecute the Jews, so they would leave and go somewhere else.
Yes,
and this somewhere else is Palestine.
That's right. They actually, it is chronicled that the Zionists collaborated with Hitler during the 30s to set up an arrangement for transporting people from Germany to Palestine.
And what about this Holocaust issue? How do you view it? I mean, you have a lot of talk.
Yeah.
Some say it exists, some say it does not exist. Some say it exists, but not with the numbers that the Israelis talk about, because the Jews, when they were in Europe, they were not, they talk about 4 million or 6 million who were the victims of the Holocaust. And some say, the Jews that back then in whole Europe were not more than, say, 2 million. I don't know what you can say about that.
Well, a lot of this denial is nonsense. We all have relations. We have eyewitnesses of what took place and so on.
Yeah.
The Holocaust did take place.
Yeah.
To a tragic degree. Whether it was 6 million or 5.5 million doesn't make a lot of it.
Exactly, of course.
It was a tragic event.
Yeah.
Why it took place, we as religious people believe that the Almighty controls everything. And you have, this is a theological concept, you have a situation where a bad person or a bad group of people want to do something, and they have to be punished for what they wanted to do. But why did they succeed in doing it? That is something only God
knows.
Understand.
Yeah.
And how it was that Hitler succeeded in killing, whether it was 5, 6 million, whatever it is, doesn't make a lot of difference. It makes a lot of difference. Every person makes a difference, but I mean, the tragedy is no different. That is something which we don't question.
Yeah.
That is something the Almighty looks after us, has looked after us for thousands of years. If he decided that this had to be, there was some hidden reason behind it, we don't know. But what happened afterwards, about the nations of the world, they felt after the Second World War that they had a conscience. They didn't do enough to try and stop it. So the Zionists played on that, and they got them to support and eventually succeed in bringing into existence the Israeli state. But it was brought into existence against the wishes of the indigenous population.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, in fact, just like I often say, in England, if people would, if the United Nations would suddenly one day say, yes, I live in a part of England called Lancashire, I don't know if you know England
at all. Yeah.
Yeah. If the United Nations would suddenly say, we're going to now designate Lancashire as a special place for Jewish population. The current occupants of Lancashire should move out, and the Jews would be there. Can you imagine the British people wouldn't behave any different to whatever to what Arab or Palestinian people have behaved in any way. And that is the situation. The whole concept of the Israeli state is flawed and illegitimate. Mm-hmm. And our wish and our approach is that the whole state should be dismantled.
Mm. How? In what way?
We pray that it should be peacefully dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
What way? We're not politicians. We state our view. We state our view that Jews and Zionists are two separate things. We state our prayer that the Zionist state should no longer exist.
Were you able to convince some people through prayers? Some influential people.
Never,
you know the politics, the way things work in this world. I mean,
if I take off my Naturi Carter hat and put on personal Aaron Cohen hat.
Yeah.
I'm not a politician. Yeah. I can give a view.
I know you are not a politician, but I mean, don't you believe that such a cause, such a sublime cause that you want to fulfill, would need to go into politics? I mean, is this against your religion or against your belief to be a politician?
It is in a way. Because we are in exile, it's not for us to tell the nations of the world how to.
But you're leaving the bad people do the bad things continuously in this negativistic approach. Okay. Don't you believe more or less that this is a negativistic approach?
Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I'll delve very humbly and very nervously into politics, but not as Naturi Carter. I'm speaking now as Aaron Cohen.
Yeah.
And I would say that I always refer people to the situation in South Africa.
Yeah.
In South Africa, we had a terrible situation. You had everybody knows it, the idea.
Israel had the best relations with South Africa.
Because they were very similar.
Yeah.
When I was a young man, the general view was that the white apartheid regime in South Africa would not disappear without a bloodbath.
Yes.
In the event, it did disappear without a bloodbath. Why? Because the nations of the world accepted and realized that the whole concept of white apartheid state was flawed. It was evil. And therefore, practically universally, they brought about moral and political pressures, economic pressures, which made the state crumble.
Okay.
I maintain, and this I'm speaking as a personal view, that that's the way forward to deal with the Israeli state.
When do you estimate that this will take place?
I have no idea.
You have no idea.
But if I was a Palestinian, what I would press for is propaganda to show the innate evil of the Zionist state, to try and get that home to all the nations of the world.
In what way?
In what way? Showing what they do, showing how it stands.
Well, you know, the people, I mean, the whole world is heavily equipped now. You have the satellites. Everybody knows about Mohammed al-Durra crime. Everybody knows about Iman al-Hams, the 12-year-old girl that was killed. Everybody knows about all the massacres that they do it, but in the same time, Sharon is a man of peace. This is what Bush says about Sharon. What do you say yourself about him?
It is an enigma. You know what an enigma is? A paradox. It's a paradox. I don't understand it. It's heavenly controlled, I would say. It's part of the test of the time, and that's where prayer comes in as well, because we don't understand why it should be like that. It's really hard to understand.
We're going to come back to that in a few seconds. Dear viewers, we're going to go into a break. Stay with us.
في الحلقة المقبلة.
أنا بذكر لك واسطة طلع مازن من الحبس خلال يومين وعلى المضمون.
يعني بنتي إنه نروح على القدس؟
كيف بدك أسكت وأهرب وقبل ما مرمي بالسجن؟
ما في أي شيء يثبت التهمة علي.
مش راح أبيع.
اليهود أخذوا الطبرية.
عائد إلى حيفا، تشاهدونه يوميا الساعة 7:30 مساء بتوقيت القدس المحتلة، 4:30 بتوقيت غرينتش.
Welcome back. Rabbi Aaron, I should like to ask you or to come back to where we stopped. We were talking about Sharon, how he is depicted in the world as a man of peace. And you're talking about, have you been a Palestinian, you would continue to believe in the salvation, I mean, to continue to struggle in one way or another. You talked about the South African regime, the apartheid regime, and how it crumbled. If we view what's happening nowadays, you see that Israel is receiving political support from all over the world, the Western countries, the United States of America, which is now represents the sole superpower in the whole universe, and it has hundreds of nuclear heads. People who are under siege are the Palestinians, who are being massacred and killed daily are the Palestinians. Do you really believe that a world pressure would gather in the foreseeable future to make Israel, the state of Israel, crumble from within?
Well, I would like to go back again to the South African situation, because I'm perhaps a little bit older than you. And I remember how it was many years ago, 40 odd years ago. And nobody believed that the South African regime was a very, very powerful regime, the South African, mighty powerful regime. Nobody believed that it could crumble without a bloodbath. And yet it did. That's a heavenly intervention. It was there to teach us that the heavenly intervention can take place. I like to bring another sample from recent history. Look at the mighty, powerful Soviet Union. Who would have believed that practically overnight it would fizzle out without almost no bloodshed at all? That these events have taken place to show that this can take place. If these mighty regimes, far more powerful than the Israeli regime, even South Africa was far more powerful than the Israeli regime, really, in essence.
But it was not a nuclear power, you know.
Well, okay. Actually, nuclear power doesn't really mean that much, for the simple reason
that you can't use it. I mean,
you have to be able to use it.
Yeah.
And you have to be a power. It's not just nuclear, it has to be a power.
But in South Lebanon, for example,
the whole control of the Zionist state crumbles away, the fact that there's nuclear bombs tucked away in a cellar somewhere doesn't mean anything.
You're talking about the pacifist way, but maybe say in South Lebanon, the Israeli occupation, it has been, the withdrawal of the Israeli occupation troops has been imposed by the resistance. It has been achieved by a resistance, by blood.
Okay.
You might pick up some examples about solutions that have been advocated by peaceful solutions. You're talking about state and people inside the state. It's not the same. But when you talk about antagonistic parties, maybe it needs kind of resistance that maybe you don't believe or advocate.
Well, it's again, as I say, you see, I'm not a politician, and I was very nervous about delving into politics,
but yeah.
I would still say that there's a world of difference between getting the Israeli state to retreat a few miles from Lebanon territory into their own country, and between getting the whole regime to crumble. That is something else. To get the whole regime to crumble militarily doesn't really seem to. I don't know. It's hard to imagine. And it's not for me, again, it's not for us to tell the Palestinians how to control, how to achieve their cause.
Yes.
We support their cause, but it's not for us to tell them how to achieve it. But if I was a Palestinian, I would certainly go and have faith that the slow but sure way of propaganda, the nations of the world are very powerful. if nobody in the world, if no nation of the world actually supported the existence of the Zionist state, it couldn't carry on. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take much. You know, political feeling is very fickle. At the moment, the United States is very strongly in support. It doesn't take much to swing things around. There's a lot of anti-Zionist feeling in the United States as well. And it doesn't take much to swing the pendulum round. And that's in the hands of the Almighty. But it can happen. The fact that it's happened in South Africa, the fact that it happened in the Soviet Union, it can happen here. And that's the way it succeeded. Mm-hmm. So I would have said that's the way to proceed, propaganda, to get the world to accept the innate evil of the Zionist regime. But that's my end. I mustn't talk more about politics because I'm not a politician.
No, it's not. I mean, you're not a politician, I understand, but you are a viewer. You're living in the world and you see what's happening. I mean, there is a problem of inconsistency in the politics, and especially in the policies of the superpowers like the United States, and even if you want to consider the UK itself. I mean, you have this problem of double standards. The Israeli state is a mighty state, in quote unquote, and you're talking about an occupying force. They commit massacres on a daily basis. They besiege the cities. They kill the children, and they erase the groves and the fields and whatever. They let the woman, the pregnant woman, die at the checkpoints. They humiliate a whole population. Yet they are not being sued for that. Israel is still being considered an oasis of democracy and civilized country in the Middle East, and it receives the whole support of the world, while the Arabs are under pressure and under siege and under aggression. How do you view the situation?
It's a very difficult situation to cope with. It needs a lot of faith. That's where religion comes back into it. That's our approach. Religion and prayer do come back into it. Because at the end of the day, though the politicians think that they are controlling the world, they are only the tools in the hands of the Almighty. Mm-hmm. And again, that is why we say, we pray to the Almighty that there should somehow or other these circumstances can. It doesn't take much. Why I refer to South Africa and Soviet Union is not because I think that's the way that we'll succeed, but just to show that it can be. I mean, nobody ever believed. The same as you question the absolute, you say it's absolutely impossible. You almost say that it's impossible to shift the Israeli, the opinion that people have about the Israeli state. But you see, the opinion about those states did shift. We don't understand why, but things did shift, things did change. Why suddenly things began to change, and it can change almost overnight in as far as the general approach to the Zionist state is concerned. It doesn't need much, doesn't mm-hmm. need much at all. And once it does shift, then the Israelis can only do what they do when there's a flow of money.
And what's needed to be done? I mean, actually, there had been, if you're living in UK, and there had been a kind of referendum among people where they consider Israel as the first threat for the whole universe. I mean, this happened a year ago. So, and the Israelis themselves said that they want to start a public relation campaign in order to make certain cosmetics to their appearance there in Europe. I mean, you might possibly be right when you talk about shifting or whatever, but how do you prioritize? How do you prioritize the actions? What should come first in order to help this change come through and fast?
Only as much propaganda and spreading of the true facts as much as possible. That's all. That's the only thing. Well, our approach is prayer and trying to talk to people as much as possible. But the general approach should be propaganda. You know, Mr. Churchill used to say jaw. You know what jaw means? Jaw is the name of this part of the body is jaw. In English, jaw means talk a lot. People used to say in England, if you talk a lot, you jaw. So he used to say jaw, not war. That's mm-hmm. and that's how you achieve, mind you, of course. Mr. Churchill in the Second World War, when it was a question of shifting the Nazi regime, he had to resort to war. There was no question about it.
He has to fight.
He had to fight. Mm-hmm. But if it's possible to do it by jaw, then that's the way. That's the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go back to Naturi Carta.
Yes.
In Europe, in Britain itself.
Yeah.
What's your magnitude there?
Well, let me refer back again to the fact that Naturi Carta is not a movement. Naturi Carta is the name of a philosophy of Orthodox Jews.
Those who embrace this philosophy, for example.
I would say that the vast majority... Let's first of all define Orthodox Jewry. Orthodox Jewry means Jewish people who observe the Jewish religion.
But you have different interpretation of the Jewish religion.
Okay, let me come to that. Sadly, as is... We're in a world where religion is not very strong, and sadly that applies to the Jewish people as well. So when we talk about Orthodox Jewry, we're really only talking about a minority of the Jewish people.
How minority? How much? I mean,
well, it's hard to say.
Proportion.
I mean, I would imagine it could be. Now, there's been a revival. I mean, I would say it's very hard to assess. I would say it could be 10% of the Jewish nation, maybe more, maybe 15-20% possibly of the Jewish nation. Mm-hmm. But then you've got, within Orthodoxy, you have various degrees.
Uh-huh.
I often say when I'm giving a talk, if you want to know what sort of Orthodoxy I'm talking about, just for the sake of a better definition, take it people who look like me.
Yeah, I mean the appearance, the way they dress.
That's not necessarily, because there are many people who dress in modern dress who are also Orthodox.
Yeah.
But let's for the sake of defining a certain group, let's say people who look like me.
And it's, I mean, the black is part of the
black,
or not
the beard, not necessarily
the black, the beard,
black
and the hair.
You know, there's, we have among Jews
the Sephardi,
Ashkenazi and Sephardi.
Yeah.
Ashkenazi Jews tend to go in black.
Who come from the West?
Yes, the Sephardi very often the old fashioned Sephardi went in white. So, but you're quite right. It's now sort of developed as being the mode of dress of Orthodox Ashkenazi Jews, and is to dress in black. So if you talk about Jews who look like us, the majority, not all, and I'll come back to the minority in a minute, but the majority do not approve of a Zionist state.
Mm.
That is, if the Zionist state came to an end, they wouldn't shed a tear.
Mm.
However, even among that majority of Orthodox Jews, there's a question of how to deal with the fact that the Zionist state is in existence at the moment.
Mm.
We don't. If it came to an end, they would be absolutely happy.
Okay.
But how to deal with the fact that it's in existence at the moment? And there are various views. You get some who say, like the Aguda, as it's called, and Shas, and these people.
What do you mean, Aguda?
The Aguda is a group of. The Aguda was founded, actually, a political group of Jews founded before the Second World War, actually to fight Zionism as But as the Zionist idea gained momentum, so they changed their colours, and they decided that although we don't really approve of the Zionist state, but we will cooperate with them. They thought that it's better pragmatically to go along with them. And others say to cooperate on a lesser degree, and so on. You get a range, and you get right over to the range of people who say we don't want to have anything to do with it. I personally have never been to Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
I've wanted to many times. In fact,
why don't you go to Palestine? Because you don't recognize Israel.
I don't want to look. To me, it's an abomination to look. To look at the Zionist regime, and to, not the regime, to look at the Zionist authorities.
You don't like to hold an Israeli passport.
No,
it's against your belief.
I don't want to sign a landing card.
Yeah,
I don't want to go through an Israeli customs point.
Yeah.
I don't want that nothing to tell me that I must open my case to show him what's in my case. I don't want to have anything to do with it. But not a lot of people don't have, obviously, a lot of Orthodox Jews do come there, and Jews who don't approve of the state of Israel. So you've got a range. Naturi Carta probably represents those who don't want to have anything at all to do with it, but that doesn't take away the fact that the majority of Orthodox Jews do not approve of the Zionist state. They don't send their children to the army, they don't like to learn the language, because the Hebrew language has developed But Zionist is not the original Hebrew language.
Now you, in your badge here, you have a Jew, not a Zionist.
Yes.
Why is that? Are you afraid to be a Zionist, or what's the feeling that comes to you?
Because we want to show that a Zionist is one thing, which is a secular movement,
not religious
movement. Yeah. A Jew is a completely different. We are Jewish, we are not Zionist. It's two different things. That's the purpose of that.
How do you define Zionism and Zionists?
Zionism is a secular, nationalistic movement set up simply to form a state similar to the states of other nations who are just based on a land, like the English are in England, and the French are in French, so the Jews are in Palestine.
It's racial, or
and it's racial, because that's where they're worse than the English or the French, because they limit their nation to a particular group, and they say beyond that group you can't become a member of our nation, and that is racist, because even the Palestinian Israelis. Or Israeli-Palestinians, I should say, they don't have the same rights as the...
The Palestinians who live in the 1948 occupied territories?
That's right, they don't have the same rights as the Jewish people.
But how was Israel, so successful in convincing the people that it's a democratic country, while you have all of this range of differences and the discrepancies as well?
Which people are you referring to, the Jewish people or the world at large?
The world at large and the Palestinians on the first place.
Well, I'm sure they never convinced the Palestinians. The Palestinians who lived there had no choice.
And what about the world community?
The world community?
Yeah.
That is one of, as I said earlier, that's the paradox of the modern times. How they can look at the Israeli state and say it's democratic.
And how can they look at Sharon and say he's a man of peace? What do you think? How do you describe these things or this position from them?
It is falsehood. It is political falsehood. And one can only perhaps explain it as part of the heritage which the Western nations had of solving their conscience for the Holocaust.
How do you view the conflict and the dilemma, the suffering of the Palestinian people?
Tragic. A moral blot on the Jewish nation. It is wrong both from a Jewish relief point of view, belief point of view, I'm sorry. It is also wrong because on the grounds of Jewish religious humanitarian values. Jewish religious and any religion has, that's where they often say that's the denomination, but common denominator between religions is the fact that you have to be humanitarian and have compassion for one's fellow man, and to come along and to plant yourself on top of another nation, the indigenous people who've been for hundreds and hundreds of years in a particular country, and say we are now going to form our country here, that is totally against humanitarian values, and it's absolutely tragic and inexcusable in any way.
What efforts have you done to help this cause, the Palestinian cause, or to make this kind of clear conscience in order to help them?
Well, we feel we have a duty to explain that Jews and Zionists are two different things. That's why we come here today. That's why we go to meetings. That's why we try and spread the word. And by spreading the word, and we also try and spread the word among our own people. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's a lot of hot emotional feeling. I regretfully, I've suffered for my views, even from my own brothers. I've had my car vandalized, and I've had threatening letters written to me
from the Israelis.
From Jewish people,
from Israelis. Jewish or Israelis,
well,
non-Orthodox.
Zionists.
Where in the United States?
In the United Kingdom.
In
Manchester.
The same thing applies to the Naturi Karta people in the United States.
Yes.
How do you secure? How do you save yourself? What do you take a measures for protection then?
We pray to the Almighty.
I mean, the authorities there.
We tell the
of course,
you pray. We tell the police.
And do they help you?
Well, to the extent that they're able to, they're not that effective. But And so it's not always that easy at all. But we, nevertheless, we do try and spread the word, and we do have success.
Well,
I myself have written a pamphlet, which has been publicised and published and set around, setting out our views, and a lot of people have come up to me. Many people have criticised it, but others have come up to me and said, "You've opened our eyes."
How do you view the compromises, the so-called peace process that's taking place? Do you believe this is going to lead anywhere? I mean, between the Israelis, I mean, the Israelis that exist now.
Futile.
Why?
Because you're not going back to the root cause.
Mm-hmm. And what's the root cause?
The root cause is the very existence of the Israeli state, which is in itself it's a flawed concept. It means you've taken away the country, the homes and the country of people who live there. So even if you have the so-called two-state solution, I mean, I'm going into politics now.
Yeah.
Even if you have the so-called two-state solution, you've split the problem up, but you've still got the same problem in the side which is going to be the Zionist.
How can we solve it then, in your opinion?
Well, you want me to go into politics again?
No, I just want to take your opinion because you're living there.
Well, again, you see, ideally, the solution will only come when the Zionist state is dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
That is because the very existence of the Zionist state is the underlying cause of the strife in the Middle East.
Let me go back into a wider space and talk about the relation with the Arabs and the Muslims. How do you view it?
Do you believe...
In other words, because we're losing time and we're almost at the end of our interview, do you believe in the clash of civilization?
No.
Or the end of the world?
No. We do have a messianic belief, which is something completely different, at the end of the world. We believe that a time will come when the whole world will be enlightened with the understanding of godliness and of religion, but we don't understand how that will apply. Let's talk about the here and now.
Yes.
The here and now is that Muslims, Arabs, Jews can all live very peacefully together, provided the right thing is done. Arabs and Jews have lived together for centuries. As we said earlier, it's not always been a bed of roses, but they've lived, and they've lived very well, and sometimes extremely well together. In Palestine itself, there was very friendly relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that has undermined it has been the existence, first of all, the Zionist ideal, and then the very existence of the Zionist state. And it will not be cured until the Zionist state is dismantled.
Mm-hmm. How do you view that this will take place, the dismantlement of them, in a peaceful ways, do you believe?
Well, I said that earlier. I believe, and that's again coming into a personal opinion.
Yeah.
I think it can crumble. How it will crumble, we don't know. It doesn't need much for it to crumble. And economic failure can take place very easily if the United States turns the tap off.
What advice can you give to the Palestinians in their occupied territories and to all people who'd hear you?
Propaganda. Prayer and propaganda. Propaganda, propaganda, propaganda. Show the world, explain the world. Like Rabbi Weiss mentioned, tell the world we've got no hatred of Jews. That's something that's very important, because a lot of people think, this myth that the Arabs hate the Jews. The Arabs,
the anti-Semitism.
That's right. They should say, we do not hate Jews. Mm-hmm. We are against and totally abhor the Zionist idea. And we try and use sophisticated methods of propaganda to show the basic evil and inequity.
Maybe you can help do that yourself and your your philosophy.
That's what I'm doing now.
But maybe you have to do it in the maybe you have to do it in the influential countries where the
well, let me explain something.
The Israelis have the tight grip there.
We do. We attend television programs. We do what we can. This is why we were so excited and felt privileged about coming to Lebanon. I think it's the very first time since the formation of the Zionist state that Jewish people have come into an Arab country which basically, I'm not technically at war, but basically that war with the Zionist state. We are very grateful for the opportunity to have been allowed in, and to express our views here, and we feel that this is the way, part of the way of spreading the propaganda that the Arab and Jew is no.
My last question: aren't you afraid of being depicted as anti-Semitic?
I'm not afraid. I know that there are people who will say that, but I know for a fact that I'm doing a far greater favor to my Jewish brethren than what they're doing.
Maybe you are the best one to do it because you're Jew. I mean, so they won't be able to to accuse you this way.
Exactly. But
okay, Rabbi Aaron Cohen from UK Manchester, I should like to thank you for your participating in this interview and for all the information that you gave for the people and for the viewers. Dear viewers, as we reach here, we should like to thank you for staying with us all of this time.